So I put together Africa Film Society out of the fact that I went to Ghana to make Burial of Kojo, and I couldn't find much of any Ghanaian films that I grew up on, films like I Told You So, Heritage Africa. I mean, these films were just not accessible. And so I started by just in my office bringing in the crew to watch some of these films, because I believe in continuity. I believe in cinematic language. Mm. And we're adding new vocabulary, but you got to know the language before you can add vocabulary. And so Africa Film Society was born that way. And then we said to ourselves, why are we the only ones sitting here watching this? Why don't we make it accessible to all?
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Connecting Communities by Akadi Magazine. My name is Abna Sewa, the editor of Akadi Magazine. And you were just listening to Blitz Bazoule, the author of The Scent of Burnt Flowers. If you've ever met or seen an interview with Blitz, you'll know he's a man of many talents. At the time of this interview in September 2023, he had finished directing the musical The Colour Purple and has a long list of accolades as a hip-hop musician, filmmaker and founder of the African Film Society and Classics in the Park. The Scent of Burnt Flowers is the story of an African-American couple, Bernadette and Melvin, who are forced to flee their home country of the USA in the hope of sanctuary in Ghana after a racist incident puts the couple's freedom and lives in danger. The book is set in the late 1960s, when Ghana's Osagyefo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah is president. The couple initially seek refuge in Accra, but proceed to travel across Ghana in the hope that a past friendship Melvin made with the president can secure them protection. But the pair's journey to find the president comes with devastating consequences. I got to speak to Blitz ahead of his headline interview at the Africa Writes Literary Festival on the 29th of September 2023. In this interview, he tells us more about his book and also some new expansion plans linked to building a physical space in Legon for showcasing and promoting African cinematic heritage. I wanted to welcome you in Sisala, what I know is India.
Ozomo.
Nice to meet you.
Pleasure to meet. Yeah.
So I wanted to start off with just exploring a bit about the book, but also about your influence. So I know that you've talked about the influence of your grandmother and your mother in shaping your appreciation of storytelling.
Yes.
So linked to the Africa Writes theme, which is intangible heritage, I wanted to find out what things make you who you are and what makes you who you are and how those childhood stories helped you to be who you are now.
Yeah. I don't think you can separate an individual from their story, you know, and arrive at that individual. You know, if for some reason you had deep amnesia and couldn't remember who you were, only story can put you back together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I'm really an amalgam of like all of these narratives, stories, family, you know. I'm tribally Sisala. My family is from the Bazoule clan. I'm, you know, nationally Ghanaian.
Mm.
Culturally, I'm like an amalgam of all these things globally. Yeah. And all these stories are part of kind of who you end up becoming, whether you are aware of that or not.
It's
quite irrelevant. I think your stories that are told to you, the stories that you've experienced personally, the memory, some of which is genetic, you know, also makes up a part of who you are. And so for me, my great fortune was that I grew up in a family of storytellers, even though they'll consider themselves informal storytellers. You know, my grandmother's stories, my mother's stories, you know, those stories are kind of what, they're the basis for me individually. And then kind of not just stories, but also the way those stories are told.
Yeah.
And we tell stories in circles. We're cyclical in the way we tell stories. So those things have all affected my storytelling.
I like the way that Blitz incorporated magic realism into the novel. There's a key reference to Mamiwata, mermaids, and shapeshifters that interact with human characters in the book, and just imagining what that would look like and how that would weave visually into a scene was powerful.
And you talk about magic realism as well, and I think about the burial of Kodjo, and I feel like that all works well, being able to weave in, should I call it reality, with this sense of magic as well?
Yes. I mean, I think the word magic is limiting. It's the only way in which the Western eye can perceive the unseen. I think it's bigger than magic. I think it's... I don't think there are words to describe what it is deeply and truly, but I think that it has still been a great medium, for me at least, to always understand that in our world there is the seen and there is unseen. And those seen things are what keep us kind of on whatever you will call this plane, and then the unseen are functioning on another plane, and I find that they are often intertwined. And have, for me at least, made for interesting storytelling, because we're not bound by forwards and backwards movement, which is deeply a Western philosophy of narrative, but you know, no three-act structure binds the way you tell stories in that way, or so fluid, because it's more elliptical and just a little bit more fluid and ephemeral in ways that straight, narrow, linear storytelling can never give you. So I've always try to take my work. Now, and that, let's also be clear, not every kind of story warrants that either, you know, and so we also have to be discerning in how you use the mediums to tell the stories, and I find that I'm deeply attracted to stories that can allow me to do much of that.
Because I was going to ask, why did you choose to tell Melvin and Bernadette's story through a novel?
Yeah. Well, I think the story is certainly about a couple on the run, but it is what's more deeper as far as I'm concerned about that story is kind of the world in which they are introduced into and the otherness of that world, which, you know, whenever we travel to a new place, you know, it somehow feels magical and unreal and surreal to us. Things that are ordinary perhaps to the local people are deeply amazing to us.
Yeah.
And I found that being able to do that through only helped me build a headspace for Melvin and Bernadette that was deeply curious about this world, because every time it was routed through the unfamiliar, they were a lot more engaged. So you know, whether it's the narrative of Nkrumah, the shapeshifters, the Mamiwata narrative, all these are things that are probably ordinary to people who live this reality every day. But, but from an outside perspective, they tend to take on a deeply surreal space. And so, yes, that was the reason. It just gave me a lot more, I could create a more sensational narrative out of quite an ordinary narrative, which is a couple who flees to Africa trying to find refuge, which ultimately is quite a basic narrative. But when you add in all those elements of otherness, I think you end up with something special.
You know, I'm excited that you mentioned non-linear, because Echo Eshun recently had an exhibition at Kempinski called In and Out of Time, and that was one of the things that he talked about, different artists not looking at that linear progression of time and focused on that Western idea of what time is, and I see that in your work as well. So I'd love to talk to you about, especially with the scent of burnt flowers, I think I've heard you talk about this sort of movement in time and writing allowing you to do that maybe more than other types of media.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of the literary space is that it's the elasticity of time. You know, it's quite natural. And I think it lends itself quite well also because it's just tangential to oral storytelling. It's just the writing of oral stories at the end of the day. And so there's no better people than indigenous people in oral storytelling.
Mm.
So essentially we've just inherited that and have kind of expanded on that in the literary world. But in writing The Scent of Burnt Flowers, I was acutely aware of the freedoms I had and also how we process memory, you know, and the fact that our memories are not perfectly categorized. You know, things that happened to you 10 years ago live on the same plane as things that happened to you an hour ago, which, you know, who's to say what comes first?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At the end of the day, they're all in this loop. And depending on what triggers, memories that are 20 years old can become your present memory.
Yeah.
And eclipse things that happened to you an hour ago. And so I think I find a lot of freedom in creating through that narrative.
What I found challenging about the book was the movement between present and past as a way of tying in backstories of the characters. In some cases, it felt like some of the plots needed more time, more explanation, and more storytelling to make the narratives believable. Parts of the book read like it would translate better on screen, so it's interesting to learn that the book is set to be turned into a screen drama. It was heartwarming to read a book where the cultural references were familiar. There were multiple references to Asajjufo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah and details about events leading up to him being deposed. The book cites cities and towns in Ghana that are familiar to me, and there is a historical reference to a failed attempt to assassinate the president, which is where The Scent of Burnt Flowers, the book's title, derives from. I won't spoil it for you. And there's the character Kwesi, the lead singer in a high life band, who features in the book. I put these points about the familiar scenes in the book to Blitz. This is what he said.
And one thing that I really liked was obviously the reference to Asajjufo Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. Also that period, that whole period in Ghana's history. So one of the questions I had was about what the soundtrack or what influenced you in terms of music, because we were at such a pivotal time then. Yeah. So could you tell us about some of the songs that maybe influenced you?
Well, specifically High Life music was the lifeblood of that period, and High Life itself is a truly unique manifestation of African sonic genius, right? And I think that finding and or certainly making one of my key characters, Kwesi, a musician, only made it natural to kind of explore those sonics. Certainly, Ibo Taylor, Vis-a-Vis, Marijata, these are bands that are where legendary still are legendary, you know. Kefren Pong is another big one. Songs like Chinchin Biedimu, massive records that I were deeply inspirational in me navigating sonically while I wrote the book.
I love that you said Vis-a-Vis. I bought the vinyl, so I've got my dad's record player.
Amazing.
I asked Blitz if he thought there was a better appreciation of literature coming from Africa and Africans now in the West. This is what he said.
Because we're at Africa, right, so I'm quite interested in your view on the sort of contemporary writing scene. So we've seen that there's a lot of Ghanaians that have entered in this Western literary space that will be showcasing their work tomorrow. So this sort of explosion of people who are coming, who are from the diaspora, who are expressing that duality in their identity.
Sure.
It's quite exciting.
Deeply exciting. I mean, again, it's a medium. Like any medium, I'm very careful not to overemphasize or, you know, give too much credence to the medium. It doesn't matter. It could have been music, could have been film, could have been literature, could have been fine art, could have been anything.
Mm.
I think that the fact that we are getting to express ourselves in a clear way and also with a clear intent that our work influences back home is most important to me, at least. And I think most of the authors you will talk to are very aware of that responsibility. of writing in this period.
Mm.
And certainly, yes, there's a lot of opportunity, way more than there was, but there are still deep challenges in how, you know, these narratives don't become so exotic and kind of a flavor of the month. And then what happens is that they are erased and a new crop are brought in to be the next flavor of the month. I think that we have to create systems that allow us to self-publish, allow us to be deeply independent, so that we're nobody's flavor. And we just keep doing our work and continue to grow, and not be so reliant on these ebbs and flows of benevolence, which is kind of what starts to happen in this window that we're in. And it's like, yeah, it's a lot happening, but trust and believe, this is not the first time it's happened.
Yeah.
We've been through these cycles, and the big reason we continue to hit these low points is that we build not much out of these opportunities. And when I say build, I mean build institutions, build publishing spaces, build ways of creating our own work and distributing our own work, which is the only true way one can guarantee perpetuity.
Very true.
Blitz is also the brains behind Classics in the Park, which offers audiences in Accra the chance to discover indoor cinema. He tells us more.
It's to do with Classics in the Park, which I didn't know that you founded, actually.
Yeah.
And we have a WhatsApp group called Find Ghana, and we share the events that...
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so I was just interested to know if you've been looking and if you feel like there's a lot more appreciation of film and film going in Ghana and in Accra, if you feel like what you've done has helped.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I started Africa Film Society out of a personal need. And it harkens back to your earlier question around building institutions that make sure that our work is prioritized, our work is archived, and our work continues to go irrespective of other people's temporary interest. And I think that we're constantly second fiddle to what people's tastes evolve into. So I put together Africa Film Society out of the fact that I went to Ghana to make Burial of Kojo, and I couldn't find much of any Ghanaian films that I grew up on, films like I Told You So, Heritage Africa. I mean, these films were just not accessible. And so I started by just in my office bringing in the crew to watch some of these films, because I believe in continuity. I believe in cinematic language. And we're adding new vocabulary, but you got to know the language before you can add vocabulary. And so Africa Film Society was born that way. And then we said to ourselves, why are we the only ones sitting here watching this? Why don't we make it accessible to all? And so we went out and we started screening in soccer parks. And I think that, or football parks, I should say. And those, you know, just the attraction was because people were also missing these narratives and films in their personal lives. And I think what's been special is that not only have we grown this program into a self-funded, self-sustaining, we're expanding. We just got a space that we're building a 50-seater theater with the exact goal, not just to show films, but also to archive films, to build a film library that is ours, where young people can come and study and understand that African cinematic heritage does exist, even though it's not taught in any schools and seldom talked about on the hierarchy of cinema. We've had it, and we've been doing it for a while.
So
Classics in the Park is an offshoot of Africa Film Society, and we hope to keep doing this and keep growing and keep exciting people who are truly curious about cinema.
Fantastic. Can you tell us where it will be, where you're building?
The office is in East Legon.
That's where you'll be building?
Yes, okay. It's in East Legon, yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, yes, of course.
Thank you for listening to this Acadie Magazine Connecting Communities podcast episode. Let us know what you thought of this episode and if you've read The Scent of Burnt Flowers. We'd love to know what you thought. The music in this episode is made exclusively for Acadie Magazine by Chichiku and the Suprapong Stars and is called Life Not Easy. Acadie Magazine is a digital platform connecting Ghanaians in Ghana and the diaspora. Our name is derived from the Ewe word Acadie, meaning source of light, and Kadimo, meaning to mark something in the Ga language. as we aim to spotlight the transformative actions of Ghanaians globally. We are a free-to-access platform, but you can support us with a like or a share, or by joining our podcast club. For a small monthly fee, we share exclusive and early release content and discounts to our subscribers. Follow us on ko-fi.com/Akadimagazine, AKADIMAGAZINE. You can also make one-off donations on the same ko-fi platform. We've left the details in the show notes. And don't forget, you can visit us at www.akadimagazine.com and akadimagazine.co.uk for all your community news. Thank you.